Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 324. Y'all, we got some Patreoners to shout out. So thank you so much, Jennifer S. from Washington.
Mary P. from Kansas.
Kayla W. from Arizona.
Aaron B. from Oregon.
And Andrea or Andrea S. from Virginia. Not sure how you pronounce it, but down here it's either Andrea or Andrea.
Yeah.
Either way, thank you all so much for joining Patreon. If you want an episode shout out just like these peeps and all the extra content that they're getting every single month, plus the backlog since the beginning of time, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast.
Okay, so I was on Patreon to upload the upcoming I Survived, and I did the tag for it, and it had, I can't remember the number, but it was over 60. It was like 63 or something that we have done. So that's
I survived.
If you're thinking, like, I don't know how much the backlog is, just one of the episodes that we've done has been 60 something.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Y'all, let me just tell y'all what the fuck happened to me last week. Well, like, since we recorded last time.
Oh, okay.
You know the story. My car.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Y'all, it has been a hot minute since I got my oil changed. Like, I am usually one that is on top of it. I was 5,000 miles over, and I'm supposed to be able to do it every 10,000 miles. So it had been 15,000 miles since my oil change. And do not come at me because I know I'm wrong. Like, I'm usually so on top of these things. And it just, life just lifed.
Good Lord. When also, like, well, no, you do drive a lot when you have to go to Picayune, but I forget because, like, you drive to work, but you don't usually take your car other places.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I have a 2014 4Runner, and that motherfucker has 187,000 miles on it. So, like, she ain't new.
What year?
2014. It's 10 years old.
Mine is over 100,000 miles, 4 years newer than yours.
I have 187,000.
Oh, okay. God, I'm really bad with numbers.
Like, I literally have double you.
Yeah. I was like, what? How?
No.
Because you went to
Tampa.
So many places.
Tampa, Salem, Texas, all the places. You know, we're trying to make this little SUV last and last and last and last.
Well, you wouldn't know that, how you're not getting your oil changed.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I had fucked up. Anyway.
Can someone clip that and just make that my ringtone? Thank you.
This bitch. I go to a different oil change place because there's this one place that does, like, the car wash and all the things. And they kind of messed up a little bit the last time I went. Like, the manager said that the guy had put my oil filter in upside down. Don't know if that's a thing, but that's what he said. Because he was like, it's upside down. And they were like, oops. And he's like, I fixed it. Because, you know, you can hear all the things.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let me go to this other place. Because, like, this one other place, I knew the owner once, and then this other place, I was like, it's more expensive. Let me try this new place. I was like, Donna goes there. Come to find out, she don't go there anymore.
Yeah, nope.
So anyway, I go, and while I'm waiting, the guy is, like, talking to the person in the bay next to me, mad shit about the place that I told y'all, you know, the car wash and all. Talking shit about that place. Talking about all the things that they do to people's cars. And then I guess the lady said, like, can y'all price match? And he was like, no, absolutely not. Like, we know what we do is, like, good service and all. We know our worth, basically. And, you know, we were just chit-chatting again, talking shit the whole time. Well, this was on Friday. I leave there, go home. Vehicle sits at home all day. I drive to Picayune the next day, which is to go to work on Saturday, which is an hour drive. On the way there, I was like, what the fuck is on my back windshield? And like, I did my bzzz to do my little windshield wiper, you know? And I was like, what the fuck? It was like smearing. And I was like, that's so weird. What is on there? Like, I even hit my defrost thing. I was like, what is this like opaque hue on there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, then I get on this like newer pavement on the interstate. And I was like, damn, that must be that new pavement. But then I'm reasoning shit away, as we always say. So I get to the hospital.
Where she works.
Yeah, where I work. And I like walk around the car and I was like, because y'all, I've needed new tires for like a year. I promise I really want this car to last. This story is not going to make it sound like that, but I swear I do. So I was like, maybe it's because maybe I bought a tire about to blow. And so I like kick the tires to see if the one's low because I know what I'm doing. And I was like, damn, okay. Go into work, leave work. And when I'm leaving, I put the put in reverse, the backup camera comes on and it's like, I can't see really because it's got whatever that is on it. Put it in park, go to wipe it off. And I was like, well, let me just wipe the windshield off, or, you know, the back windshield off while I'm here. I was like, what the fuck is all this oily shit on here? I was like, whatever, leave. You know, I'm like, it's fine.
You probably said, damn, picky you.
Well, because that's the place that got the fucking rat in my muffler that followed me an hour's drive. If y'all remember that story. So I was like, ain't no fucking tell it. Plus, because I had rolled my window up and down and that little weather strip had come off with it. And so I was like, oh, it's probably from the weather strip that is dry rotted on my 10-year-old car. I'm going home and needed gas. And luckily, y'all, I needed gas. So I stop about close to halfway. Y'all, when I get out and pump gas, smoke is like bellowing from the undercarriage of my SUV. The embarrassment that I felt, because I felt like everybody at this Love's gas station was looking at me.
Yeah.
Because like coming from a life where I've had shit cars, I was like, everybody's looking, you know,
yeah,
ain't nobody studying me. I go like, fuck, like it's the oil. Because I remember one time when my sister's car did that from the top and it was like burning off oil or something. Anyway, so I pop the hood, check it. Not a drop of fucking oil in this. What do? I call Colby. And I was like, I was pissed because I was like, they fucked something up. Blah, 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 blah. They were bitching the whole time and they fucked something up. So I go in, buy some oil, and make it home safe. Colby takes it because, of course, it's the fucking holiday weekend. So they're all fucking closed. Colby takes it the next day that they're open and gets it all handled. And he's like, hey, while I'm out, do you want me to just go ahead and get you tires because you need them? And I was like, ooh, I put it all for a year. That's a big old purchase. Put it on the fucking credit card. And he goes, so I'm getting your tires, but you need new rotors and brakes. He said it was like metal on metal that they were like, I'm surprised she hasn't hydroplaned her stuff so bad.
Oh my gosh.
And he said that like the brake pads, you could like break them in your hand because they were so brittle. And that like the rotors were like purple color because it like been metal on metal.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, ooh, sorry.
Oh, fuck.
So that was not cheap. Brakes, rotors, tires, and an alignment. I'm like, alignment should come with new tires.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that should be like a thing.
Right. Also, one time I was like, oh, I bought a new set of tires. And they're like, if you come in, we'll rotate them.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Did I ever go in to get them rotated? No. Because I never went to that place.
For like your oil change and stuff? Yeah. That's kind of how they get you though. You go in for your oil change there so they'll rotate them.
But I had completely forgot and I was like, motherfuck.
Mm-hmm. Well, the guy at the where I got my oil change, he did tell Colby, he was like, tell your wife thank you for not burning up her engine. Because like, could have been real bad.
Yeah.
I was like, thank everything that I needed gas because otherwise I'd have just bebopped my way the whole way home. With not a drop of fucking oil. Well, I wouldn't have made it the whole way because the damn engine would have blown up.
Yeah. Good Lord.
It's like, I don't know much about cars, but I know smoke billowing from the bottom is not normal.
Yeah. I'm
like, that's not right.
That's so scary. Yeah, when Carrie told me where she was going, I was like, I don't use them anymore. Because one, they are expensive. And two, Yolanda died when I went there, but I had never made that correlation really because I was like, she was old.
You know? She was old.
And so it's fine, but like, she wasn't where I didn't need to get anything done to her. And then when I left there, like, they had to jump me off and all of that. And so it was like, that's not how I went in there. But again, I don't know shit about shit.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's an old car. Like, that's my luck. Gosh. My back definitely likes having the CRV now. If I had to get down in a Honda Accord, No.
I lowered a stool at work today for a very specific exercise for somebody to do and almost didn't get up from it. I was like, oh, God. Like, I had to use the mat to pull me up. I was like, oh, nobody saw that.
Oh, you were me in the ocean?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I sure was glad Colby could take my vehicle, though, to get it fixed because, I mean, it was Tuesday. Like, I can't just not go in. Like, I have people scheduled. You know, he has a little bit more flexibility in his schedule.
Yeah.
Did he just take the whole day off? Yes. Did he get my car fixed, went and got gas, then went and got my car fixed again that day? Did I say went and got gas? Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Went golfing and then got my car fixed again. I'm like, this motherfucker living his best life.
Mm-hmm. You know who was living their best life this weekend? Us in the pool.
Yeah, we did have a good time Saturday.
The pool was good. Then they did a little bit of day drinking. I did some gummies, and then they did some gummies.
Y'all, we played this game. Hang on, I got to look it up, because Sober Carrie can't remember the order.
Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza.
Oh, okay, wow.
Couldn't remember it when I was on the gummies, though.
Y'all, the rigmarole of trying to get these two bitches, Donna and Tiffany, I mean, to try to play this game, because Tiffany did not understand the game. We re-explained it. Donna's cackling, because Tiffany doesn't understand the game. We play the first round. Turns out Donna still doesn't get the game after having made fun of Tiffany for not getting the game.
But I didn't know it because the card I laid and what I said correlated.
Yes.
And so, like, they all thought I knew it. I was like, no, I don't get it.
Yes. Oh, my God. It was so funny. But basically, it's like kind of like war, but not. Anyway, so you, like, flip the cards over and you, no matter what's on your card, you're saying that in order, the cat, pizza, cheese, mouse, goat, burger, whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
And then when the word that you says matches the card, you'll have to put your hands down real quick, and whoever's the last one gets the card. So it's kind of like war, but not...
Yeah, you want to go out.
Yeah, their goal is to get rid of your cards.
It was really fun.
And there's, like, a couple of animal cards, like a monkey...
Hedgehog. Groundhog.
A groundhog and a...
Gorilla.
No, the...
Norwal.
Norwal. And you, like, you have to do, like, pound your chest, pound the table, put your hands over your head. And if you don't do that, then you get the card. I don't know. It was just so much fun.
Colby was cracking up.
Oh, my God. Wait.
Oh.
Colby... Colby hates... Not hates. He just doesn't like to play games with us, which really sucks because we were so excited we had a fourth finally.
Colby catfished us.
He sure did. First night he played games.
We were like, okay, we got a fourth. We got a guy who actually wants to play games.
This motherfucker.
That motherfucker got with Carrie and he said, I ain't got to try. She didn't want to give him blowjobs anymore. He doesn't want to play games.
That's not entirely untrue.
Shit has changed in their relationship. They secured the bag and they were like, don't have to do that anymore.
We were playing and Colby was like kind of watching but not watching because he was sitting in his recliner behind us. Y'all, Donna said, this motherfucker's got FOMO because Colby was standing up. I did not know he was directly standing behind me, leaning over my chair watching us play. The leap that I leapt out of my chair when I turned around to see him, I thought I was just going to see him turn around in his recliner, and he was right behind me when we were all a little fucked up. Y'all, I seriously could not even move. My back was hurting from laughing so hard. Like, I was catching the biggest cramp.
Like, she was legit terrified.
I came out of my skin.
Yeah, you came off the seat.
I did it. I really had no, I didn't ever even hear him stand up.
And I was like, I said he had FOMO. Like, he was there. She was like, didn't know he
no.
was. No. But he was leaning on her chair.
I had not a clue.
You know, it's funny anyway, because that's funny. But then when you're all three on gummies and laughing your ass off, like, I couldn't fucking breathe.
No, I literally. Like, couldn't even sit upright because I caught a cramp in my back laughing so hard. God, it was funny.
Yeah, but it was really good. Also, we played Disney's, not seen it. That's what we normally play.
It was Disney Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah.
Tiffany knew all those fucking answers.
Knew them all.
Like, legitimately, Tiffany had like four pies before I'd even gone.
Yeah, she just was like going, getting there. We were like, holy fuck. Colby said, stop watching so much TV or something.
That's the thing. He doesn't want to play, but he wants to be nosy.
He'd say like, so what was that answer again? Or what I was know.
I'm like, bitch, you would have known these answers because like a few of them were about Hercules, your favorite fucking movie.
It was a much needed, like, all of us just hanging out, having fun, not having to, well, I mean, you had to work that day, but like not having to do anything that night. Tiffany stayed with me. And after we got home, like, I was just so tired.
The sun and the water drained.
Yes. We were just sitting there and we were going to play Mario Party, like, because, I mean, we're just sitting there, you know? And I was like, can we not? Like, can we just talk for a minute and then we're going to go to bed?
Right. Too bad it's not like the old days where you had, like, two day beds in your room so we could lay down and talk. Well, before we get into this episode, we got to talk about Lumi. Because, y'all, it is swamp season. It is chafe season, and it is stinky season, and it is the season to get some Lumi deodorant. What makes Lumi so special? Well, unlike other deodorants, Lumi is powered by mandelic acid that helps control body odor for like 72 hours.
And that's everywhere from your pits to your feet to your privates, all those little nooks and crannies you can use Lumi in.
Y'all know Donna and I are both extra large pizzas, and look, we do not want to smell. Lumi deodorant is the way to go because it will keep all those little nooks and crannies, like Donna said, from smelling.
It's like a set it and forget it. You know, you put it on at the beginning of the day, and then you don't have to worry about any body odor.
This is literally game-changing when it comes to like a whole body deodorant. And look, don't just believe us. Lumi has over 300,000 five-star reviews. That is a lot of people on the same page about how awesome Lumi is.
And they're feeling more confident because they don't have to worry about body odor from their head to their toes.
It truly is a whole body deodorant. Like, if you're wondering about, does it go there? Yes, it does. Can I put it there? You sure can. Because it is pH balanced so that you can literally use it on your private area.
Or as Colby would say, from your rooter to your tooter.
And even past your tooter, because you can go to your feet and stuff.
To your tootsies.
And y'all know that Donna and I both love and use Lumi. I use Lumi before they even became a sponsor on this podcast. Think of it like a pre-odorant, because you want to use it to stop odor from happening. And there's tons of different scents. You know which one Donna likes?
Toasted coconut.
There's clean tangerine, lavender sage, or you can go unscented, because y'all know I have that too. And there's so many different products to choose from as far as like, do you want like a cream tube deodorant? Do you want a solid stick deodorant? Do you want wipes, body wash? What do you want? And if you're like, oh God, which one do I want? Lumi's got you covered, because they got a starter pack that is perfect for new customers. Because it comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, and two free products of your choice so that you can try it all. So maybe you're like, I want to try that body wash and those deodorant wipes. Well, try it. And you're going to get free shipping. So right now, new customers can get 15% off all Lumi products with our code CREEP. And if you combine the 15% off already discounted on the starter pack, that is over 40% off their starter pack. So head on over to LumiDeodorant.com and use promo code CREEP for 15% off your first purchase.
That's code CREEP at LumiDeodorant.com. LumiDeodorant.com.
One more time, that's 15% off all Lumi products when you use the code CREEP at LumiDeodorant.com. Okay, Donna.
Is this a serial killer?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's I think you're going to like it.
Well, you know what? We had one of our huddles today at work. You know, their little icebreaker is, what's a fun fact that you know? Like, what's something? And I was just not in the fun fact mood. Like, today, it's just not been a day. And because I forgot my medicine until I remembered why I was, like, you know, not in a good mood. Anyway, but I was like, I don't have one, you know? And my manager was like, you do a podcast about crime and ghosts. You have to have a fun fact. And I was like, well, you know, I'm terrible with numbers. So I just,
right.
I figure, but I think I'm like in the ballpark. But I was like, at any time there's like at least or like around 30 active serial killers in the U.S. or whatever. And they're like, okay, cool. Don't feel safe at all. But like, so we just like started talking about that. But I think it really is like 25 to, I don't know, 40. You know what I mean? So like 30 was a roundabout number. Really bad with numbers. So I guess I was just manifesting this fucking serial killer story.
Okay. According to the AI generator on Google, it says that there are between 25 and 50 active serial killers at any given time.
Okay. See, I was right in the middle.
Then it says that a 2018 study showed that the number of active serial killers had decreased from 198 in 1987 to 12 in 2018.
Shit.
But then some stuff said it's down to 36 from like 400. So who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, really, you're really guesstimating.
Well, I was going to say, just like with serial killers, though, we're like, this is what they say they've done.
Well, this story's kind of not different than what you just described, but also kind of different. Because I think his number is actually way lower than what's predicted.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, like, what you're saying is they'll be like, this person's killed 400 people. I mean, we can only prove 8, but they've killed 400.
Yeah. You
know? They're like, well, we know he killed this many, but we know that. That's all we know. You know, and there are some things that people think he may have done, but just looking at his trajectory, I just feel like it went from like 0 to 60 way too fast for there not to be an in-between that we don't know about. Okay, so we're talking about Christopher Wilder. He was born March 1945. Now, he was born in Australia. His mom is Australian, but his dad is American. His dad was stationed in Australia, fought in World War II, and when he got to Australia, met Christopher's mom, and they had him. Now, when he was an itty-bitty baby, like infant, they did not know if he was going to live. Like, to the point of they had given him his last rites as an infant, and then he ended up pulling through.
Good Lord.
For me, this just starts indicating, like, now, what was wrong with him? Could it have been, like, jaundice? I don't know. But in my head, I'm like, did he have, like, an anoxic brain injury or something? Like, where you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain to give, like, some sort of traumatic brain injury? And then, like, a couple of years later, supposedly he almost drowned in a swimming pool. Like, again, could that be another anoxic brain injury? Because then they say when he was 3, he started like having convulsions, almost like seizure-like activity is kind of what it sounded like. But so I'm like, that's a lot of brain stuff in the first like 3 years of his life, even though we technically don't know the infant thing was brain. But that's where my head went. Pun not intended. But what you're going to find with Christopher Wilder is that you're going to get pissed off real fucking fast.
Why is he not a 3-named person?
Well, think technically he is. Hold on.
Okay.
Christopher Bernard Wilder. He had dual citizenship because, you know, of his parents.
He gets it from his mom.
Well, technically and his dad.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was thinking he lived here.
No, he lived in Australia.
Oh, okay. Then never mind.
This next part of the story is where our anger with him really begins, because he was involved in a bunch of bullshit and he just kept getting slap on the wrist after slap on the wrist after slap on the wrist. And I feel like if these things had been taken seriously, the rest of the story would not have happened. When he was 17, so like picture it, 1963, Christopher and a couple of his friends, two other boys, who later said that, okay, they didn't actually have anything to do with this, but this is the story. They took a girl to the beach and they gang raped her.
Oh my God.
Now,
well, I'm sorry. Of course they're going to say it later when he's a serial killer that they're like, we didn't do that.
Well, and I think like even then they said they didn't do it. But I don't have a lot of information on the whole like ins and outs of this part of the case. But he ended up pleading guilty to carnal knowledge, whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, that's like devious thoughts and stuff.
Right. Yeah, but like y'all fucking raped somebody.
Right, yeah.
And this is what you're pleading guilty to. And he fucking got 1 year of probation and mandatory counseling.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Fucking bullshit. Now, allegedly, the part of his mandatory counseling that he got with this included electroshock therapy. And this kind of starts to come up later because it seems like maybe he developed like
a fetish?
Yes, with the electric shock. The Wikipedia article, though, does say that a journalist that had done some research in it was like, no, there's literally no evidence to show that he actually had electric shock therapy. So take that with what you will. Now, when he was 23, he got married. But the marriage only lasted a few days.
Who is he? Kim Kardashian and that guy, Chris Humphries? I don't know why I said it so high-pitched. I was just so excited that I remembered their names. Oh, what? You were going to say something smart.
No, I don't care. So his wife divorced him because she said that there was some sexual violence in the marriage and that she had found underwear that was not her own and photographs of naked women. Part of me thinks that this underwear and these naked pictures that he had were actually victims. Mm-hmm. And not just, maybe the pictures, not so much. He could have gotten that because he is into photography and like that's part of his whole thing. You'll see later. So the pictures, maybe not as much, but I think that the underwear was trophies from the beginning. So that's why I say I think that his reign of terror was way longer than we really think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was fucking 17 when he gang raped somebody with his friends. So I think there was a lot of rapes that we don't know about because, like I said, I think those were trophies. Now, one article I saw too said that he had like tried to kill her a couple of times too, but I don't know because I also don't know how long they dated before they got married. Like, I feel like this is a lot to have just happened in like a couple of days of the marriage. So I'm wondering, like, was there some abuse before? These things kind of happen. And then she married him and it didn't stop. And then she found his briefcase with the pictures and the underwear and was like, I'm fucking out. This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
Now, in 1969, he had some nude photographs of a nursing student. And he was trying to use those to blackmail her because he wanted to like blackmail her for sex, basically, is what he was trying to do. She was like, absolutely not. Told the police, but then again, it's 1969. She's a nursing student. I'm sure she could have been kicked out for like breaking moral clauses and all of that. She ended up like refusing to testify and the charges were dropped. So at this point, he had a couple of run-ins with police. Things were kind of getting to a place where he was like, oh, I probably need to get the fuck out of Dodge. So he moved to America to Boynton Beach, which is like right by Palm Beach. And while he was living here, he did very well for himself. He had a construction company that he was literally like a millionaire. He was worth like $2 million. He was like a race car driver too. And he was like picture Miami Vice meets Magnum P.I. Like he was like all that. Like he looked the part, you know, it's like the 70s, the 80s. And he's got the stash, got the clothes, got the Miami tan. Like yeah. He is like Mr. It. And it seems, I wouldn't say well-known, but like, you know, he's got a good group of friends. Like, he's built a life for himself kind of around Miami. But in 1971, he went back to his old bullshit, although I'm not sure that he ever wasn't up to his old bullshit, because he traveled a lot, like from Florida to Hawaii to like all the different places. Like, he just traveled all the time. So he could have done things in these other places and nobody would have been the wiser. But in 1971, he was arrested and charged with soliciting a woman to pose for nude photos. Because what he liked to do was to be like, hey, I'm a photographer. let me take your picture. I want you to be a model. Do you want to be a model? You can be a model. Let me take your picture. And then it was always like, we need to take some nudes. You know how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
So for this, he actually pled guilty to disturbing the peace and just had to pay a fine.
Disturbing the peace?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's so many places in this story where they could have put him away for some really a long time, and they don't. And you can see where he just becomes more aggressive, and it's just awful. And he had had a bunch of run-ins with the police, like, through this time with, like, these little, I hate to say little charges because it should be taken very seriously, but he had to go to a psychologist, and the psychologist actually said that he was a mentally disordered sex offender and said that he was not safe except in a structured environment. And like while he was in therapy and all, he talked about his fantasies and his fetishes to have like a woman be like a slave for him and with sexual partners like the electrocution and all of that. Now in 77, there was a high school student that he tried to get to have oral sex. And she was like, no. And so he was like, well, I'm like, he threatened to beat her up. And she ended up getting away and he got arrested again, but nothing, like nothing came of it. Then in 1980, same shit, another teenage girl like lured her to his car with the same thing of like, do you want to be a model? I can take pictures of you. Like I can get you a modeling job. And then he drove her to like a rural area and raped her. And he pled guilty to attempted sexual battery and he got fucking 5 years of probation.
Attempted?
Yes. I'm like, what the fuck? And that's when the therapy was like mandated, like you have to get this therapy. And it's like, what the fuck? Like he literally took her to a field and raped her and he got 5 years of probation. Meanwhile, that story I did just like a week or two ago, fucking in Mississippi, that same time frame, like 85, this is in 1980, same decade, that guy got a fucking life sentence for raping that person.
Right.
And this is an underage girl that he raped. Not that one is necessarily, you know what I mean, don't rape fucking anybody, but I mean, are you fucking kidding me? And this guy got 5 years of fucking probation. That's disgusting. So somehow, even though he was on probation, he went back to Australia.
By this time, he's rich, and rich people can do a lot of things.
You're not wrong. Okay, so while he was in Australia, he was accused of kidnapping two 15-year-old girls from a beach in New South Wales. And he, of course, same thing before, like, forced them to take the pictures, which is kind of going back to what his wife had found, is why I'm like, some of those could be, the pictures could be trophies, but also like taking the underwear and all. So they ended up figuring out who he was because he had a rental car. And so they traced the license plate of the rental car. And so they figured out who he was and they arrested him for kidnapping and indecent assault. Well, his family posted his fucking bail while he was awaiting trial. It had gotten pushed back a couple of times, like, because like this happened in December of 82. In May of 83, he was supposed to go to trial, but it ended up not actually going to happen until April of 84. And so, like, with this trial getting pushed back, he came back to America. And the way this story takes place from here, he never made it back to Australia to stand trial for that rape.
What the fuck?
I don't know why. Like, I feel, I just can't be too gruesome when it comes to, like, the details of, like, rape cases for some reason. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't know. Like, I feel like sometimes I could be so, tell you everything that happened to someone when they've been, like, tortured and, I mean, the toy box killer of it all. But for some reason, sometimes I just have a hard time with the rape stuff. So I'm not going to go into a ton of these details because also there's so much to this story. So there is some murders in Australia called the Wanda Beach murders that they think like he's linked to. So there's a like there's a chance that he is actually the perpetrator of those. But like there's whole podcast series on that, you know. And there's also a Hulu documentary that came out like literally like 15 days ago called The Beauty Queen Killer, 9 Days of Terror. And it's a story of Tina Marie Risiko. I hope I pronounced her last name correctly. But basically, he held her captive for 9 days and forced her to help him with his crime spree. So that's why I say, like, know that there's a fuck ton to this story that there's literally no way for me to get all the details in. And unfortunately, there are a couple of his victims that they're like 99.99% sure he did it, that they never found their bodies, but they were last seen talking to him or whatever. Especially as he kind of got out of the Florida area, he was very recognizable because it was like February, March, April-ish, and he was like so tan from living in South Florida, you know, wherever the fuck Miami is in Florida. And so there were like other places that he kind of stuck out a little bit. So like people recognized him. Like he just had a kind of a distinct look.
Yeah.
And then like one of them had been like not dating him, but kind of like talking to him and stuff. And so it's like he was in her date book, like address book and all that. So like some of the ones that they could not find the bodies to, it's like, no, he did it.
Yeah.
So remember I said that he is a NASCAR driver, or race car driver. I don't know if it's NASCAR, but
I was going to say, damn.
I literally don't know.
You don't know shit about shit.
No, I don't know shit about shit, especially when it comes to race car driving. But I do know that he did do it, and he was at the Miami Grand Prix. He was literally a boom, boom, boom contestant. Now, there was a girl by the name of Rosario Gonzalez. She was only 20, very much like he kind of had a look that he preferred in his victimology, typically around the same age. And typically his MO is to be like, do you want to be a model to lure people away? So with that, it's going to come with like a certain appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So on February 6th, Rosario is working at the Miami Grand Prix. Christopher Wilder is a driver. Witnesses saw her leaving, like talking and leaving with a man who fit his description, and she was literally never seen or heard from again.
Oh my gosh.
And to this day, nobody has found her body. After that, on March 5th, there was a 23-year-old. Now, she was a high school teacher. Her name was Elizabeth Kenyon. This is the victim that I told you that they had actually kind of dated, talked before. It's said that he asked her to marry him and she said no, but she was last seen at a gas station filling up her car, and that the gas station attendant said that she was talking to someone that matched Christopher Wilder's description. Now, the attendant said that they appeared to be planning a photo shoot, but I'm like, how would you even know that?
Come on now. Now, I will say, if the attendant said that, like, when they were getting interviewed and not knowing anything.
And I don't
that's
know.
Legit.
Yeah. But now, to be fair, I don't know when they said that.
Right. But like, you know what I mean? I just feel like,
yeah,
it's like it comes out and it was like, yeah, when I saw them, that's what they were doing.
Right. Well, and I don't think that the police took her disappearance very seriously because she's 23. You know, it's the 80s and a 23-year-old can just disappear from their life if they want to. But the family was like, nah, she wouldn't do that. And they hired a private investigator that really kind of drummed up a lot of the like leads and stuff about Christopher Wilder even. And that PI even called him. And from there, he left the area. Like after that, he kind of left the area. Elizabeth's body has never been found either. But it's like Elizabeth's family remembered him and they were like, no, he was such a gentleman. Like that's how her family described him, because he was very charismatic and all of that. And so even though he's kind of using the classic, hey, you want to be a model, his appearance and his demeanor, people believed him.
Right.
Not long after Christopher Wilder left the Palm Beach area, he went to Indian Arbor, which is like 2 hours north of where he was. A 21-year-old named Terry Ferguson disappeared from where at? A local shopping mall. That's where it always happens with these types of stories mm-hmm. with the like photographer model thing.
Which sucks because like I know from different like top models and shit like that, I guess supermodels, sorry. But like they've said that that's how they got.
They were found. Yeah, they absolutely. Were found,
like working at the mall, just at the mall, you know, all of that. And they are successful models now. Right. And so you hear that and you believe that someone will come up and like this could be your big break.
Right. Yes. And again, it's the 80s. It's not like you can be like, give me your business card. Let me Google you.
Right.
Terry's body was found 4 days after her disappearance in a canal. She had been beaten really badly and strangled. They had to identify her through her dental records.
Ooh.
The next victim actually survived. Like in the most I survived way, she fucking survived. 19-year-old Linda Grover. So same thing. Hey, you want to be a model? She's like, cool. And he knocked her unconscious, tied her up, and then drove her to a motel in Georgia. So, like, we've crossed state lines now.
Oh, shit.
This shit's a felony now. He kept her for hours, raping and torturing her. Now, Linda said that he had, like, a specialized machine that he would attach to her, and it would, like, shock her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it was like he had created this contraption to be able to do this. And this just goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. Like, did he or did he not get this electroshock therapy and did it or did it not create fantasies for him? The other thing that he did was he glued her eyes shut.
Uh-uh. Oh, God bless.
So, like, her eyes are glued shut while he's doing, like, all this raping and torturing her.
Fuck.
So, like, what she felt of the machine, it was literally through feel.
Yeah. And amplified.
Right. And it was like, she couldn't, like, she literally couldn't see it, but she was like, no, like, it had, like, a switch. It had all this stuff. Like, he had created this. Being the fucking badass that she is, Linda actually broke free, ran into the bathroom, and locked herself in the bathroom and started screaming louder than anybody on the planet has ever screamed. This freaked him out because he's like, I'm in a fucking hotel. Like, people are going to be able to hear her screaming. So he skedaddled. So when she knew he was gone, fucking Linda left the hotel room, made her way down to, like, still super glued shut, made her way to, like, the office and was like, call police. So they took her to the hospital and they showed her a lineup. She was able to identify Christopher Wilder.
Holy shit.
So from there, he, of course, like, left Georgia. And from there, he went to Beaumont, Texas. He met a girl named Terry Walden. Now, this Terry, because there's a couple of Terrys in the story, this Terry, she was a nursing student. She was married and had kids. He offered to take pictures of her, and she was like, no, I'm good, you know, whatever. Well, it was kind of a weird enough interaction that when she went home that night, she literally told her husband about it. Like, there was this guy, he had a beard, he had like an Australian accent. He was like, won't take my picture, you know, this was kind of weird. On March 23rd, Terry disappeared. Some stuff says 5 days later, some stuff says 3 days later. Her body was found and she had been stabbed to death. And then on March 25th, so like, these are like days sometimes. Like, this is not a long cooling off period. March 25th, literally 2 days later, Suzanne Logan, who was only 21 years old, disappeared from a mall in Oklahoma City. Her body was found the next day near Manhattan, Kansas, and she too had been raped and stabbed, and it looked like she had been tortured too. It seems like in the same ways that Linda had been tortured when she was abducted. Then Cheryl Bonaventura was abducted on March 29th. Same thing from a shopping mall. Her body was discovered on May 3rd. And she had been shot and stabbed multiple times. Okay, this one is so creepy. So on April 1st, Christopher Wilder is at a Las Vegas show for like young models who were there competing for the cover of 17 magazine. And there was a girl named Michelle Korfman. Now, Michelle was only 17, and there is a literal picture of Michelle like on the runway, and Christopher Wilder is in the background, like watching her, kind of smiling, like watching her. And she was his next victim.
Oh my God, that's creepy.
And so for this, like, makes complete sense that she would believe him, that he's there to take pictures. Like, you're literally at thing in Las Vegas for kids competing for the cover of 17 magazine, like a literal magazine.
Yeah.
So they were seen leaving together, and that was the last time she was ever seen alive. They found her body over a month later, and she had died of asphyxia. Like, it seems like she had been, like, face down, held down, because she had the soil in her larynx and trachea. Like, she died, like, suffocating. With all of this, people are starting to put the pieces together, and Christopher Wilder actually ends up on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. And, like, literally the day after he gets put on the 10 most wanted list, that's when he abducts Tina, who I was telling you about has the documentary that just came out on Hulu. Mm. And like I said, he kept Tina for a few days and actually made her help him kidnap another girl.
Oh, gosh.
Together, they kidnapped Donetta Wilt from Indiana, and they kept Donetta for 2 days, torturing and raping her. And then he took her to like a wooded area in New York and stabbed her. But Donetta played dead. This fucking 16-year-old girl was like, again, in a true like I survived moment, literally played dead until he was gone, and then like climbed out of this wooded area, and a car passing picked her up and took her to the hospital.
Holy shit.
Now, his final victim was a 33-year-old named Beth Dodge. He shot and dumped her body in a gravel pit and then drove to the Boston Logan Airport. And like, there was some like car exchanges in all of this. And I think that the reason why he killed Beth Dodge was probably for her vehicle, because she doesn't match his pattern of like 16 to 23-year-olds, you know? But this was so weird to me. They go to the airport because he buys Tina Marie a plane ticket to go to Los Angeles, like to fly her back home. And like, literally, nobody knows why. Like, no one knows why he let her go, like why she survived out of everybody else, other than the people who like played dead or fought him and ran to a bathroom. Like, why did he let her survive and then just sent her back home? Nobody knows. So after he drops Tina Marie off at the airport, he starts making his way to like find other victims, and he stops in Colebrook, New Hampshire for some gas. While he's at the gas station, there are two state troopers at the gas station who recognize him, because he's literally FBI top 10 most wanted.
Yeah.
All the things, like, people fucking know who he is. As the police officers are like walking up towards him, he jumps into his car and grabs his .357 Magnum. One officer like literally jumps on him from behind. Like, the struggle ensues. There were two shots fired. One literally went through Christopher Wilder and shot the police officer that was like trying to restrain him on his back. And the other one shot and killed Christopher Wilder in his chest.
So we have no answers.
Right. And it's like, they're calling this death by suicide because, I mean, it was him pulling the gun and pulling the trigger. But they don't know, like, did he do it on purpose? Was he trying to just, like, did it go off accidentally? Everything that he had said in the past and all was, like, I'm never going back to jail. Like, basically, like, this is how I'm going to die. Like, yeah. I'm not going to do that. Yeah, he's dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And we have no fucking answer as to where some of these bodies are still buried. Did he have anything to do with the Wanda Beach murders in 1965? There was a murder of Colleen Osborne in 1984. Did he have anything to do with? Like, if you look at the Wikipedia page of, like, linked cases, it's like, scroll, scroll, scroll. of things that they're like, did he really do that? But like, we know for a fact that there are 8 women that he killed. And I really think that there could be hundreds of more rape victims.
Yeah.
That we don't know about.
Yeah.
Because it's the keeping of the underwear and the pictures and all from that long ago that I really just believe, like, his escalation, like, why did he all of a sudden go on this, like, 7-week spree? Like,
right.
Like, there were things kind of leading up, but they had such a long cooling off period. And then it was like, boom, 7 weeks going out, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say in a blaze of glory, but you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It was like, I don't know. So they called him the beauty queen killer, and literally all the answers died with him.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad he can't hurt anyone else, but I really wish we had answers and that they could find, you know, the bodies of his other victims and
yeah,
just give that family closure and stuff.
Those families. There's,
yeah, multiple, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I just know that there has to be so many more, like, victims of rape mm-hmm. that we don't know about. And that's what I mean, I guess, about, like, him having more victims. We know not necessarily murders, although I think that there are, because there's so many cases that mm-hmm. are kind of tied to him, but we have no proof. But, fuck.
Right. He was brutal. And he, like you said, he had no cooling down period mm-hmm. after that. It was just,
yeah.
like, however long it took him to go to the next state that he was going to, and then he would attack.
Yeah. I mean, he literally was on a spree. But, like, why? Like, what caused that, you know? That's the answer I wish I had.
Yeah.
Well, among many others.
I was going to say a lot of them, but yes.
Well, I hope your story's better because mine sucked.
Well, today I'm talking about a man named Bruce Kelly.
My name is Bruce.
Did I tell you one time there was a customer who called in? Or I say customer, but it could have been a consumer or an admin. And his name was Bruce. And I, like, did that. And I was like, I'm sorry. He was like, no, it happens all the time. But I think it too.
That's funny.
But I was like, oh my God, I just did this.
That honestly doesn't surprise me in the least that you did it.
Well, I know. But like, I did the whole, like, my name is Bruce. Like, the whole thing, you know. And I was like, oh, just the name Bruce, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So Bruce was born in January of 1952 in Glendora, California, which I learned is a small town outside of L.A. Now, Bruce was a great student, but even better athlete, and he ended up going to college on a baseball scholarship.
Also, my name is Bruce. Finding Nemo happened in Australia, and that's where my guy was from.
Oh, shit.
P. Sherman, 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney.
Fast forward through a marriage and then a divorce, but not as soon as your guy did his whole thing. But Bruce was living his best life as a single father to his daughter, and he was a sales manager at a medical supply company. Everything was great in Bruce's life, besides something that had plagued him his whole life. He had phobias. Where your guy had fetishes, Bruce had phobias. And we all have phobias, but Bruce thought these phobias were no longer just an inconvenience in his life. They were holding him back from promotions and opportunities in his company. And, you know, he had his daughter to provide for. So his phobias were enclosed spaces, flying, and water. Now, the enclosed spaces and flying, those were the main things that Bruce wanted to work on. Because he was in sales and you got to go where the money is. And I understand where Bruce is coming from. Not that I have a fear of flying or anything, but I have a fear of taking up space. And like, if I had to go for like my company, would they have to buy 2 plane tickets?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like all of that. And so that holds me back from wanting to travel and being able to travel.
Well, and you have a fear of water too.
Oh, now the fear of water. Yes, yes, yes. But not to Bruce's extent.
Yeah.
Mine's more dark water. I don't know how I got on this, but on TikTok, they have these, it's called a certain phobia, but it's when big statues are like submerged, but like kind of out of the water, but in the water. So it looks like they're sitting in the water and it's like this giant thing. I don't like them. I don't like them. I don't like them.
The videos of watching people in caves where they'll be like swimming in a cave and they'll have to go through this like enemy. Oh. I can't breathe. Like I literally cannot breathe watching them.
Oh my God. I used to watch Creep Mom and some other people play. It's called like The Forest or Sons of the Forest. And they would have to swim down into a cave like you're saying. And I could not watch that part. Because also, games have gotten way better with their graphics. And it's very realistic. I could not watch it. So with the water thing, it didn't necessarily hinder him. But it was annoying to him because he didn't like pools, lakes, oceans. Like, at least I'll do pools.
Yeah.
But, like, he didn't even like to take a bath because of how he, like, he just couldn't handle when the water would, like, cover some of his body and all of that. And he just felt suffocated by it.
Oh, that poor thing. That breaks my heart.
Right? He couldn't take a shower unless his back was to the shower. Like, he couldn't turn around and put his face in it or anything like that. And, like, Bruce didn't know how to swim because he never could. And when he was, like, forced to do anything around the water, around, like, enclosed spaces, he would basically have a panic attack. You know, his breathing would become irregular. He'd start shaking, experience muscle cramps, and become dizzy as well as nauseated. I mean, like, he took showers. He was more of a, you know, stay on dry land kind of guy. But still, like I said, he couldn't turn around in the shower. And, you know, it still was just a lot. But like I said, this was starting to really weigh heavy on Bruce because he didn't understand why he had been like this his whole life for no reason.
Also, think about how scary and traumatizing it was probably for him having a daughter and being a single parent and having to give that child baths.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that. Bruce was just like, you know, sucking it up. He was just going on with his day-to-day life. But he started feeling a pain in his chest and started having really bad headaches. And so he went to the doctors, but they couldn't find anything wrong with him. And they were like, it's all in your head. Like, there is nothing going on. You know, like, all the tests are clear. So Bruce felt like he was at the end of his rope, and that's when he met Rick Brown. Now, some places said Dr. Rick Brown, but others just said Rick Brown. He was a hypnotherapist who specialized in past life regression. Now, I will say that Rick Brown, he doesn't claim that everyone's going to remember their past lives. You know, he said it's actually usually about 1% of people who do therapy experience a past life regression, but Bruce was one of the 1%. Their first session was basically like a meet and greet, go over the rules, expectations, you know, that kind of thing. So that was on November 17th, 1987 at Covina Counseling Center in Glendora. But now their second meeting, they got down to business. Rick Brown, he wanted Bruce to recall a time and a place where he could first remember being scared of flying or feeling that fear he gets when he thinks about flying, you know, just trying to get that same emotional fear. And almost suddenly, Bruce started kind of like twitching and, you know, like he was experiencing something. Rick Brown was trying to ask him questions. And when Bruce finally answered, he said where he was, and it was a submarine. Like, because he was, you know, again, trying to elicit that fear of flying, but he was like, I'm in a submarine. Now, you know, this is not what they were thinking because this is completely different than an airplane. So it's like, okay, I'm on a submarine. This is stupid. But then Bruce was like, oh my God, I'm dying. Now, when asked the name of the submarine, Bruce answered immediately, and he gave the exact SS-174. It was called the Shark. And he even said that that was part of the, like, a certain fleet. And he said that they were stationed in Manila Bay. Now, when asked more about the situation, Bruce answered that he was a crewman on board of the submarine, and his name was Johnston, James Johnston. So I don't know if this is really like the best practice or whatever, because, you know, you don't ask ghosts like how they died and shit. But Rick Brown, who might or might not be a doctor, probably not, though, was like, okay, tell me about like the time of your death. Tell me specifics. And Bruce promptly replied with the time, the place he was on the submarine when it happened, and he said that he had drowned. Bruce also said he wasn't alone when he died. His fellow comrade, Walter Pilgrim, was there as well. Now, they were both serving during World War II. This place was near the island of Celebes, I think is how you say it. And the time and date was 11:34 p.m., February 11th, 1942. While going through this experience, Bruce acknowledged that, like, what was happening to James Johnston and not him. And he was safe in Glendora. And apparently this is part of the therapy, and this is where, like, the hypnotized person realizes, like, they're not the person who, you know, they're not the one who's recalling these, like, this past life was someone else. So whatever's holding me back, it's not really holding me back, it's holding them back. And you, like, separate, you compartmentalize that or whatever. And they can usually break through and no longer suffer from whatever was plaguing them. And he really was better after that session. It was like he did, like, distinguish those worries, like, oh, that's because of what happened to James Johnston, not me. And how I said, like, submarine and airplane are way different, I just mean, like, where they are, because they were saying, if you think about it, in a submarine is an enclosed space, and it's long and skinny, and so is an airplane. It's just different.
Yeah.
Things, but like, why would he ever be on a submarine, you know, in this life? So, like, that's what triggers him. Even though Bruce was feeling better, the name and this memory was haunting him. So, a few days after the session, he ended up going to the library just to see if he could find anything that would make sense to him. Because at first, he was like, am I just making this up? Like, is that what that's about? And like, that's the therapy. I just made this up. But he was like, how did I know these details?
Yeah.
Like, and it was rapid fire. It wasn't just like, oh, yeah. And like thinking of a thing. It was just like he knew it like the back of his hand.
It wasn't like he's a history buff and was like, you know what? This ship was at this place, you know?
Yeah. He was basically us with Google before Google was Google, you know, like how we're like, wait, we got to figure out if that's right or not. Like, what's going on? You have to look for it. When we can't pronounce something, you try to get the right pronunciation and all of that. Bruce went to the library, started digging around, and he found that there was a USS Shark that disappeared on the date that he had mentioned, by the island that he had mentioned. And on the crew roster was listed James Edward Johnston and Walter Pilgrim. Now, James Johnston, not a common name, but common, okay? But a Walter Pilgrim, like, what the hell? Like,
I don't know, because, I mean,
You can't make that up. Like, it sounds made up. And you're like, really? But, like, what?
I mean, it sounds as made up as what's the guy's name that's doing the hypnosis?
Rick Brown.
Rick Brown sounds like an 80s music star.
Yeah. So, Bruce, he called Rick Brown and told him what he had discovered. So Rick was like, oh, really? All right, well, if you're up for it, I want to see if there's more than you can tell us. Because again, how Rick had said, there's like 1% of people who actually have this like experience with a past life regression that's factual and, you know, all of this. He wanted to, you know, just see if this past life shit or maybe that Bruce did see a textbook and didn't remember it, but there it was, you know, just how we can remember lyrics or like a commercial that we heard when we were kids or something, you know?
Well, and Bruce is literally validating his life's work. Like, if he's like, yeah, only like 1 or 2% of people actually do this, and then Bruce does, it's literally validating his work.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Right. So for the next 6 months, Bruce had a session with Rick Brown weekly.
I wonder how much that cost him.
Right. And over the course of these sessions, new details emerged. Bruce recounted that James was born February 1921 in Alabama. And that's not groundbreaking because, again, he could have learned that from the books or whatever when he was trying to verify, you know, if he was losing his mind or not. But then Bruce could vividly see and remember James being 12 years old, and he was standing there and watching his mother die. And he had his younger cousin, Elizabeth, by his side while he's doing this. His mom was on her deathbed, literally, and they're waiting for her to pass in the room. And Bruce recalls that the death of his mother really hit James hard because she was a single mom. Now, and I don't know exactly what happened to James after that, like who he went to live with or whatever, but the next memory that Bruce recalled was how he remembered having to walk through the back door of the house. James and his mom, what Bruce had remembered is that they had rented like a one bedroom, like one room out of a house, basically, from people. And it was like they weren't good enough to come through the front door. So they had to come through the back door.
That's so fucked up.
And Bruce said that James had signed up to work for a government work program called the Civilian Conservation Corps during the Great Depression. Now, again, that's something that could have been, like, said, but, like, the part about his mom, the part about, like, going behind, this, again, wasn't like Google is today where you can find out, like, the details, the, like, minutiae, I guess, or what, you know what I mean? Like, those intricate details of someone's life. If he found, like, this had happened, these were the people on it. Like, James wasn't, like, this decorated war hero that,
right,
you know what I mean, like they don't have all of this information. He was literally a name written as someone who had died, you know what I mean? When I just said that, it reminded me of the Chicks song before they were the Chicks, the Soldier song.
Yes, can't listen to that.
No, I cry all the time. But like, that's like, he's just a name that no one would have even known besides his family and now Bruce. While James was working in that program, he met a girl in 1938 and they fell in love. So this is what Bruce is recalling. He said her name was Molly Lassiter and she was James's first girlfriend. And in one of the sessions, Bruce recounted that James and Molly had met on a bridge one day, and James asked Molly to run away with him so they could be together, but Molly couldn't because of her father. So soon after that, James joined the Navy and was shipped off abroad on the USS Shark. Now, sometimes these sessions didn't come like with groundbreaking things. They would just have like random memories pop up. But the thing is that they would resonate with Bruce's life, too. Like, James always loved eating the end pieces of bread, which, gross, but you do you, boo. My mama used to take them for the team because she would eat them because no one else would. And, you know, she ain't wasting any of that money. But I do not like the ends of bread. Do you?
I will eat them if I have to, but no, I give them to Jax.
Yeah, yeah, I don't like them. What do y'all call them?
The ends?
I don't know what I used to call them, but I didn't call them that. Maybe the heel?
I can see that.
But yeah, I didn't like it, but my mama did. And even nastier, she would break it up and put it in buttermilk.
Yeah.
She would do that with cornbread, too. And that motherfucker would always do it in a clear glass. I'm like, oh, God, I don't like milk in a clear glass. But anyway, you know, that was the same way that Bruce was when he was younger. So it's just odd that they both had that quirk growing up. Now, with this, you could say Bruce was just making shit up because that's what happened in his life. And how's anyone going to know if James Johnston was like, ooh, give me that heel of the bread.
Right.
Something that Bruce had always brushed off was the feeling of deja vu. But, you know, now knowing that this past life was like a possibility, he remembered that there was this time that always stuck with him. He and his parents were in Long Beach when he was around 8 years old, and he said that he told his parents that he felt like he had been there before, but his parents were like, no, you haven't. Like, we've never been here, so you definitely haven't been here. You're eight. Like, whatever. You know, like, shut up, sit back, and put your seatbelt on. But Bruce said he just could not shake the feeling of him being there before, and it was just unnerving to him. But come to find out, when James was in that CCC, the Civilian Corps, he was stationed in California. So, like, that could have been a possibility. Now, like I said before, they did have these sessions for a bit, but ultimately, Bruce was cured, and he wanted to get back to his own life. He was a single parent, you know, so he didn't have time for weekly sessions for the rest of his life. And Rick Brown knew that. And so it was like, okay, cool. You do you. Go tend to, you know, your daughter. Do all the things. Fly. You know, make that money, honey. But Rick kept studying because he was invested to know more. Like, now he had these little details and everything that he wanted to know. Like, was this guy, like, humoring me or giving me what he thought I wanted?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on? And he actually ended up talking to Unsolved Mysteries later on, and they were on an episode together, which was like 5 years after everything. And that's when Unsolved Mysteries took Bruce and Rick Brown to Jacksonville, Alabama, where James was from, just to see if they could capture anything. Now, remember, it had been 5 years. But Bruce accurately described parts of the house he and his mother had lived in. And remember the whole, like, going through the back of the house thing? Well, his mom was unmarried during that time. And James's relatives that they interviewed said that they did have to go through the back of the house. And they weren't allowed in the rest of the house that they were renting from and stuff. So that, like, checked out. And again, that wouldn't have been something that he could have easily known. Now it would be something that people would say, like I came from this and I'm someone who you're writing an autobiography about and all of the things, you know? They also met up with Betty, whose full name is Elizabeth, like Elizabeth, the younger cousin who James stood by while he was watching his mom pass. And she was able to validate that. And then he mentioned the bread, and she was like, oh my God, James did that. Like, he loved that bread, like the ends of the bread.
Yeah.
Now, later on, after his story aired on Unsolved Mysteries, Bruce was interviewed, and he said that he still doesn't know how to swim because he was like, I'm 56. There's no need for me to learn. Like, I'm cool. But he said he did move up in the company and is now like a corporate director, has flown countless times for his job. And he was like, I could never imagine before Rick Brown doing any of that because he was so debilitated. And like his chest pains, his headaches, they were all in his head because of, you know, like they were systematic. But it was like him and his thoughts and his phobias and the panic attacks making that happen.
Yeah.
There wasn't like a cause for it other than that. But like all of that stopped after he met Rick. He said going on Unsolved Mysteries, like he enjoyed it, but that wasn't for him. That was for Rick. And that was for James's family. If he could validate anything, you know, if he could give them any sense of closure, because that submarine just vanished kind of thing. Like they were never seen again. So they don't really know what happened.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, was able to let them know what he saw and, you know, like that James did drown in there. He wasn't alone. He had that guy with him, you know, and they didn't have to, like, wonder anymore.
Yeah.
Now, some people say, like, is this really a past life thing or is it not?
What's their argument on it not being?
That he could have found certain things, he could have known certain things or been led by Rick Brown to say certain things.
I mean, you don't know what happened in those sessions, that's for sure.
Right.
I mean, it really could have all been bullshit.
But again, it's just like, if it happened now, I'd be more like, okay, well, did you see something that, you know, like, just stuck out to you? You remember that name or, you know, whatever. But like, back then, I just feel like it was harder to, like, just come across things like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was just a history buff, like you said, or, you know, anything like that. I don't know. But also, his phobias were cured. So even if all of this was a fluke and, you know, not a past life thing, it did what he wanted it to do. Like, he, you know, was able to go on and live a full life and move up in the company, fly, you know. I mean, the worst thing that could have happened from this is, like, that he would have still had his phobias and been out some money, but he doesn't.
Dang, I don't know. I mean, because like you said, it's like, it's, he's not, like, Googling stuff right now.
Right.
It's not like it's 2012 and he, I don't know, why 2012, I have no idea. But you get the point. Like, yeah. He's not like, what submarine went away and whatever, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like, I don't know, I kind of believe in past lives.
I do too.
But I also am not super, like, religious or spiritual. So it's like, I really don't know what happens in the afterlife. I don't know. Because you hear so many stories about kids that say stuff, they know people, they remember things that happened, and it's mm-hmm. like, how the fuck would they have known that?
Right.
Like, it's literally impossible for them to have known that.
Right. But also with him, it's like he went in for, yeah, he was scared of water and stuff, but that wasn't his, like, but that wasn't his thing. He was like, I want to be able to fly and stuff like that. And then for it to be a submarine, but then it, like, kind of all came together. This is why.
Right.
You know, and so I don't know. I just, it's very compelling to me.
Yeah, he didn't go into it being like, I'm afraid to fly. And then it's like, I was in an airplane.
Like, I was a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
When we were in New Orleans, well, this was before, like, I had gotten there, but Margarita had her, just had this person, like, read her, and they had said that she had multiple past lives, and she was actually on her last life, but, like, she was going to have, like, a really full life and, like, live till, you know, like, fucking old age.
Yeah.
But, like, they just kind of talked to her about, like, her past lives, and all of her past lives, like, had something to do with, like, what she's doing now, you know?
Really?
And it was, like, all very, like, motherly, like, caring stuff, like, creativity with works with their hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, all of that. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. It just, I love this kind of stuff.
I mean, it's like, how do you argue with it when it's like they're remembering stuff that you can literally Google and prove?
Yeah.
But conversely, you can literally Google it and prove it. Mm-hmm. So, like, did they? Don't know.
Right. Well, and just like I said to you about the person, the gas attendant, that I was like, okay, did they come out and say that before or after they knew that, like, he did his whole camera shtick about taking a picture or whatever? You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, again, that could validate. No, that's really what he would do, and this is how he would get people, and that's what they were talking about. Or this just came out and they just have elaborated on it, and, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
And two, you want to give people the benefit of the doubt. But, like, people be lying too. You know?
Yeah.
That's what's hard too. It's like, I mean, are they just, like, I don't know. Again, because especially when people can fucking Google.
Right.
Well, Well, y'all let us know what y'all think about this. Did he really have a past life? And is that what was causing all of his phobias? Let us know what y'all think. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.